All right, ready. Welcome to the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast, episode number 146 with Kyle Koenig of American Health and Safety. With summertime coming, I wanted to find somebody out there who could sit down and talk about heat. A lot of us have folks who have to work out in the hot sun all day and all that stuff. But I also wanted to find a person who could tell us some really good stories about taking care of people when the heat was a little too much for them. Kyle, if you could just tell the audience a little bit about your background, and then we'll just dive right into heat.
Cool. So my name is Kyle Koenig. I live in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I started my career in safety around when I was 18 years old. I got out of high school, and like many people in high school, they, don't pick safety as their top priority as a career field that they're going to want to get into. So my father, he had worked in the safety, and he convinced me to try out the field. So I went on to a project at Michelin and worked there for a few years. And then afterwards, I still wanted to join the Army. So I joined the Army National Guard as a combat medic. And then I went to basic training in AIT shortly after that small stint at a Michelin when I was doing as working as a safety coordinator there. And then when I went through basic AIT, finished out as a combat medic, I came back, did consulting for a while, and worked for an electrical company called Amtech Electric for a little bit. And then after I got done with that, I was working for that consulting company. And then I went on a deployment overseas in 2019, 2020. And then, unfortunately, since COVID happened, we got stuck over there. So it was a little bit longer than a usual deployment. So, as you're familiar with in the military, there's a lot of train up and all that stuff that's associated with going on a deployment. And essentially, the deployment was supposed to be 6 or 7 months long. And it ended up being more towards some people were there for as long as a year and a half straight, away from their family. Myself, obviously, I was gone probably for 6 months, worth of train up away from my family, including, going to California and Texas, Georgia to do training for the Army. And then after I got done with all the training, we went and deployed overseas. And then obviously COVID happened. We got, stuck over there. So ended up being, close to a year and a half, 2 years away from my family. So after I got done with that, I was pretty much done, with the military, even though I loved every second of it and everything like that. I was like, yeah, this is pretty hard on, my personal life and career and all that stuff. So once I got done with that, I picked up a job working as an EHS manager for a tier one manufacturing facility that produced headliners for BMW. It used to be Magna Interiors before Grupo Antolin bought them out. And then after I worked there for a short time, I worked for VLS Environmental Solutions, which they do a lot of different stuff. They do waste to energy, waste management, industrial cleanups, hazardous waste response, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I've had a pretty broad background. And then as of a few months ago, I was getting, I made this LLC on the side and everything like that to kind of do first aid training and kind of spread awareness and make a little bit of money on the side. And then I started getting a lot of, emails and calls and stuff like that associated with, that LLC or that website. And then about 3 months ago, I made the decision to jump ship from my last job, which, was a really hard decision because I had a really good manager, good safety director, good VP of safety and everything like that. But, it's been working out pretty good so far.
Awesome, Kyle. Awesome. I know it's always hard to make that jump from the known to the unknown out there then, really hard then. So being overseas in the different theaters that we've been in the last couple of years, it's a whole lot hotter over there than it is here in the
Oh, yeah.
States then. So I'm sure that you've seen a lot of the different heat casualties and ways to keep folks hydrated with a work rest period and all that. Have you found anything that really seemed to work good to really help out the folks out there?
Yeah, so overseas, unlike back here, in South Carolina where I'm at right now, everybody complains that it's like 100 degrees out, 105, whatever. Overseas, it can get up to 120, 125 during the day, which is pretty freaking hot. You go to a porta john to go to the bathroom, and you're like, "Ooh, it's nice and cool in this porta john," versus outside. Outside is freaking hot, and you're like, "Oh, I could get to some shade and cool off for a little bit." It's only like 105 degrees in the porta john versus out in, the open, it's 120 or 125. So yeah, I've learned a couple different things, a couple different tips and tricks throughout my career to try to, mitigate heat risk and try to prepare employees and prepare employers to mitigate those heat risks during the summertime, because there's a lot of things, and I'm sure you've seen this in the EHS field. If you go to a lot of employers, you'll notice that a lot of them, still don't offer water, electrolyte packets, or whatever to employees on a daily basis, or they don't have the proper equipment or whatever. So I think really, just drilling down on the training aspect, making sure people are trained, to understand what those heat illnesses look like, whether it be heat stroke or heat exhaustion, understand the signs and symptoms of heat-related illnesses out in the field, train employees to do that, and then bring the right equipment. So whether that be to provide water or electrolyte drinks or whatever, just bringing the right equipment, hydrating is going to put you way ahead of a lot of people out there, because a lot of people aren't even doing the, bare basics of just, bringing water, electrolyte packets, and everything like that. And I know that sounds pretty basic, but there's a couple other things that you can do. One of the things that I always preach and tell people is, depending on whatever your workplace is, this could be, you could have a service truck. If you're a construction company, it could be manufacturing facility, whatever. I would recommend having ice or ice packs, the instant ice packs, to bring on site, because if you have a heat casualty, it's going to be really critical that you give them the right care. So that right care is going to pretty much entail making sure that they're getting the right fluids, if they can take them, that you're getting them to a cool place, you're taking off their clothing, to a certain extent, obviously, and then you're trying to cool them down with either ice or ice packs. So if you pack the neck and the carotid artery and the your axillary and inguinal area, so your groin and armpits, if you know a little bit about anatomy, you'll understand that your carotid artery runs through your neck, your brachial artery runs through right here under your armpits, and then your femoral artery runs towards your groin. So if you pack those areas with ice sheets, instant ice packs, whatever, then you're gonna really bring that casualty or that heat casualty down. Their core temperature is gonna come down a lot faster if you just focus on those areas versus trying to cover them up or whatever with an ice sheet or something along those lines.
So I'm sure that you saw a couple of soldiers with the different levels of heat illnesses. The heat stroke, of course, is obviously the worst one out there. Heat cramps are out there too. Have you found anything that you can kind of, like a person could feel it coming on, you think? I'm not sure that I'm using the right medical terms for this.
Typically you're going to see heat casualties in the early stages, display signs and symptoms of headache, dizziness, weakness. And then there's going to be some other symptoms that are going to be associated with that later on. So when you go from heat exhaustion to heat stroke, and you kind of progress throughout that rehabilitation kind of progresses, you're going to notice that their heart rate gets a little bit faster, a little bit stronger. They're going to potentially not sweat. They might not sweat at all if they get into closer to heat stroke. They're going to, I'm trying to think of a couple other ones. They could potentially start throwing up. I have seen that a couple times. I saw that really bad when I was in Kuwait at a firing range. I'll tell this story really quick because this would be a good example of an incident where we had multiple levels, heat casualties and everything like that. So when we were in Kuwait at a firing range, we had it was probably like 120 degrees outside. And if you know anything about the military, they use the black flag procedures. So like, they'll say, okay, the wet bulb globe temperature outside is X, so we have to go to heat cat five outside, which basically means that you have to have work rest cycles and all that stuff. Well, obviously when you're in the military, you have to wear potentially body armor. So if you're on a range or whatever, you're gonna have to wear body armor, and that's going to increase your temperature to be pretty high. So one day I was out in a range, and we had about five patients coming up to us that were displaying signs and symptoms of heat-related illness. So I was out there with another medic at the time, and we had to, hook up IVs and all that stuff to those patients. And we had brought out coolers with IVs, which is a little bit higher level of patient care than obviously some people are going to be able to do in the safety field or manufacturing or construction. But we had a couple of people hooked up on IVs. And we had actually had to end up, I had to go to the, range safety officer, NCOIC at the time, and ask them to have a safety stand down, which was pretty serious. So we had a safety stand down, and we took the casualties back in our SLA, which was basically a Humvee that's designed like a ambulance. So we took them back in our ambulance, and as we were following another troop carrier back to the base that we were at, which was Camp Buren, people were throwing up off the side of the troop carrier. So if you start seeing signs and symptoms of people throwing up, and they can't take water or anything like that, that's a pretty serious sign that they're going down towards that path where they can potentially get rhabdomyolysis. Some people call it rhabdo. They could go, have a heat stroke. And some people could potentially die from that type of stuff. If you start signs and symptoms like that, that's definitely going to be very serious, potentially call 911 for some of those symptoms.
Yeah, when I was a young man in the army, I was very ego driven. So I was probably I probably would have been your worst patient. There was no way that I was going to stop. I was going to help everybody else. I was going to so, it's really kind of I don't know if I would even call it neat, but like Harry, I'm almost 60 now, and when I think about like when I was like 18, I did so much dumb stuff, and some of it is just because I was just young. I didn't have that experience. Other things were I didn't want to look weak in front of others too, So I know that I've seen a lot of folks that I'm pretty sure had heat stroke, but they were just going to keep on doing it because they were I can't call it embarrassed, but maybe it was just a, I can't give up. Like it's okay to stop, but it's, I'm stopping because of the heat. I'm not stopping because I gave up, of course, So.
Yeah, there's a lot of especially in the military, police and fire and all that stuff, or construction, a lot of people have that big ego, or just the culture on the site or whatever is, I don't want to report anything because I don't want to look weak or whatever. So a lot of people, their signs and symptoms go unnoticed, and obviously that causes a lot of problems down the line, with treating that patient, because the further they are down that line in your patient treatment, the harder it is to get them back sometimes.
Oh yeah. I think probably one of the only real times that I ever had to deal with heat was when I was really young in my safety career. I was working for an oil and gas company out there in Texas, and they were putting in sensors and doing all the measurements, and all that stuff. And we would definitely have to have cycles where we would have to stop, and folks would have to rest and all that good stuff. Then we'd find shade. Some places we really didn't find any shade, so we would just tell folks that they'd have to hop back in the truck and put the AC on and everything. So it was really hard, because the folks in the field understood it. But when you talk to the office folks, and the office folks say, "Well, how can it be that you can walk X acres and do all this stuff, but all of a sudden you guys got like half the work done?" So they don't. There is that little bit of disconnect between the folks who do the work and the folks who sit back in the office and like want to know why something isn't done out there. So.
That's a hard thing to try to preach to people. I try to preach that whenever I teach first aid classes and stuff like that. You have to put yourself in their shoes. And a lot of these manufacturing facilities, their offices have air conditioning, but the production floor doesn't. Especially like warehouses and stuff like that, logistics warehouses, stuff like that. They're really bad about trying to save some money on air conditioning, but not for the office folk. Obviously, that the people in the office are going to have air conditioning.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Exactly. So have you let's kind of get back to a general rule of thumb. Now what I'm going to say is dated by 30 years or so, but depending on how hot it was, that we would say you work for 45, you rest for 15, and sometimes when it wasn't quite that hot, you would work for 50 and rest for 10. And other times when it was just very nice and seasonable and even cold out, there really was no rest time then, because folks didn't have those heat issues to worry about then. Have you found something that really seems to be a pretty good general rule of thumb out there?
It really just depends. There's just so many when you talk about safety, there's just so many different industries, whether that be general industry or construction or maritime or whatever. And it also depends on where you're located and all that stuff too, because if you're more towards the south, maybe you're acclimated to that type of weather or whatever. Versus if you're up north or whatever, working in a factory and it's getting hotter. It might hit you a little bit different. There's a whole bunch of different factors, but generally speaking, I try to reach the companies to do an assessment on the workplace and really deeply understand what type of work that individuals are doing and how much exertion they're pushing their people on. So, like if people are doing hard labor. Let's say they're working at a facility that has an oven or a hot press or something like that. You might have to give them longer rest cycles and implement that versus if maybe you're at a logistics facility and or a warehouse. And maybe the forklift operator, moves a pallet once every 5 minutes or something like that. They might not need the same work rest cycle as somebody that's in construction or somebody that's doing or that's a welder or something like that that's exposed to a hot environment. So it really just depends. But the one thing that I would tell people too, I was sitting in a ASSP conference yesterday, and OSHA was there, and this was a hot topic. Was he related on this and what the new standards are going to say and stuff like that that they're talking about. And basically what they said was, regardless of whatever engineering or administrative controls that you put in place, you really need to try to implement something. Because if you implement nothing and you have a fatality or serious injury or something like that, then they could potentially cite you under the general duty clause right now without it being the standard.
Right.
So depending on, how serious the event is, your company could be found liable for a heat-related illness if you stand by and do nothing. That's why I say, it's so important just to do like the basic level stuff, work rest cycles, water, hydration packets, ice packs, stuff like that, giving people an air conditioning every once in a while. And just if you treat your employees good, they're going to treat you good. And it works, full cycle. If you treat your employees like trash, then you're not going to have high attrition rates. You're going to have high injuries. You're going to create a whole lot of headaches for yourself rather than just spending a little extra money on, a couple water bottles or whatever. If you're a company that's making millions of dollars a year anyway, what's a pallet of water cost in comparison to a fatality or serious incident where somebody gets maybe rhabdo or something like that and has to go to the hospital and get treated? So
Right, right,
that's what I would recommend to people.
right, 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 right. When you were just talking there, I just had a flashback when you were saying about the different industries out there. I was helping at a hazardous waste cleanup site, and I was in level C, so I had like the respirator on, the Tyvek suit, the whole deal, the gloves. So now I'm even hotter. Now there was no
Oh,
way for
yeah.
that heat to dissipate from me. And plus, with the mask on, it's not like you can lift the mask up, hold your breath, take a good, drink, of course, all that stuff.
Those
So,
Tyvek suits get hot.
So that really added a whole new kind of level that at some point in time we were just not making progress because we were actually resting a whole lot more than we were working. Luckily, everybody was real, real flexible, and we just shifted everything to doing some night work, and that really helped out an awful lot. But if
Yeah,
you
that's
don't
a good
plan
point.
for it, we had to go get the portable lights and all the other stuff. So then, of course, it's the whole, well, how come you didn't think about this and the expense? And that's because I knew it was going to be hot. But once you start to really put more stuff on, whoa, does it get hot, really fast,
Yeah, that's another good point. We used to do that in the military as well, is if you know that you're going to have to do something like, hey, we got to unload this Connex for the 900th time and move it somewhere else, as they commonly do in the Army, then let's do that at night instead of doing it during the day, just because it's 40 degrees cooler at night, doing that stuff during the day. Yeah, I had a really good experience yesterday. So I just recently joined a community response team for my county in Spartanburg. And yesterday we had a call out where they shoot out a text to everyone and say, hey, we got this search that we need to do. We got this emergency or whatever. Can you respond? And I was driving back from the ASSP conference from Columbia, South Carolina. And it happened to have, or there happened to be a fire truck that hit another semi truck. And, one of the firefighters were injured, and the fire truck, steered off the road and hit a tree on the side. So I ended up responding to it, and I was pulling some of the equipment off of the fire truck, trying to help out the best I can and everything like that with the fire departments and the other emergency response teams that showed up. And after I had been working and trying to pull off some of the equipment, hose and stuff like that for a little bit, it was very surprising to me the attention to detail that fire department had and that emergency response team had, because they had set up a tent for specifically for a rest cycle and work rest cycles. So they had a tent set up, they had benches. They had coolers with cold rags, cold towels in there that were ice in ice water. They had a trailer that had cold water and Gatorade and electrolyte drinks that was plugged up prior to, obviously, they didn't know that this emergency was going to happen. So they had that plugged up prior to going out. And then when they got out there, they started up generators to run that refrigerator. And then when you came off of the line trying to help, Somebody, the fire chief there, was handing out waters and cold towels and stuff like that to help reduce the heat injury risk that was associated. And they had fans set up and everything. And I was like, man, if I could just get, some of the people in the safety field or, manufacturing or construction to think on that level, like, hey, we know it's going to be 105 degrees out today. Let's set up a designated area to do that type of stuff. Then, people would have a lot less heat injuries and illnesses and stuff like that. I was pretty thoroughly impressed with the level of detail and everything that that fire department had with responding to that incident.
Those guys have probably also learned it, hopefully from somebody else and not the hard way. Sometimes
Oh, yeah.
we learn things the hard way, and all of a sudden the company will give you all kinds of money and resources, too. So that is a fantastic thing then. So, and this whole thing has really got me thinking that even though I work in a very nice temperature controlled environment, we don't do much outdoor activities and all that kind of stuff. The times that we do go outside, it's really freaking hot out there,
Yeah.
So I need to go back and think about like what I'm doing at my places too. So,
Yeah.
I do know that a couple of safety guys I've talked to that that luckily they just happen to have a safety shower close to help out with somebody who was having a heat casualty, So, but that's
Yeah.
something that just happens to be handy. You're not always going to have a safety shower or even have a generator or power or something, but there's something
Yeah.
all of us can do out there to look at engineering these hazards out as much as possible. And when you can't engineer it out, well, how do you take it and like reduce it as much as possible too?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's important to get those administrative controls in and get the equipment, get the hydration packs, all that stuff. Anything that you can use at your disposal, especially the freeze pops. Everybody loves the freaking freeze pops.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
if you can get some people some squinchers or freeze pops or whatever brand it is, people gobble that stuff up out in the field. If you put it in a freezer, they'll take it. They'll take a box of them or 10 of them or 5 of them or whatever and eat the crap during the
Exactly. So, Kyle, we're just about bumping up on time. Could you take a couple seconds and let people know how that they can find you, connect with you, ask you some more questions, and all that good stuff about heat?
Yep. So if you have a LinkedIn, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can just look up Kyle Koenig. If you want to go to my website or my company's website, it's AmericanHealthAndSafety.com. And then I also have a YouTube channel, which is Kyle Safety. So if you'd like to subscribe to that, then feel free to do so as well.
Kyle Safety. I need to go back and look up that one too. So, all right, Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today. So that is episode number 146 with Kyle Koenig. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks.